This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. The Tragedy of Arthur is a play within a novel, within a mystery. Arthur Phillips and his twin sister Dana grow up with the love of Shakespeare imbued by their father, Arthur Phillips, who has a fringe of Einstein hair and is charming to the point of seduction and shrewd to the point of brilliance. He's a con man who paints masterpieces until he's imprisoned for it. Then one day he gives his son, Arthur Phillips, his greatest legacy— previously undiscovered play by William Shakespeare called The Tragedy of Arthur. Is it a fraud? Is it for real? Is Arthur Phillips' real legacy the fact that you wind up wondering what is real, what is not? What does it matter anyway? In the end, the reader gets to judge the play on its own terms. The Tragedy of Arthur is the latest work by one of the most acclaimed novelists now working in the English language, Arthur Phillips, whose previous novels include The Song Is You and Prague. Arthur Phillips joins us from New York. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
So, is this meant to be confusing? We've got all the different protagonists named Arthur?
Well, you've got confusing and you've got, how about enchanting? How about that?
All right.
No, it's certainly not meant to be confusing. I don't think it should confuse anyone if they plunk themselves down and read it.
But it's meant to be illuminating.
I hope so. What it illuminates exactly may be out of my league to explain, but it should be a lot of fun. How about that?
Yeah. So the father, Arthur Phillips, tells his son, Arthur Phillips, a fantastic story. He says that in 1958, he was hired to make a replica of a valuable painting for a rich man over in England. And in his library, he finds, bound into a collection of quartos, a 1597 play credited to Shakespeare, The Tragedy of Arthur. And he takes it, doesn't consider it a theft, because, of course, the guy didn't know that he had it. Now, why would anyone think that story's real?
Well, you know, I think if anyone's going to find a new Shakespeare play that we haven't noticed before, that's not an unlikely place to find one. People in the 1600s, 1700s would buy up these quartos. Essentially, they were, you know, one play, little paperbacks. And when they had 8 or 10 of them, they would stitch them together in some sort of a collection. Mm-hmm. And then they would handwrite a table of contents. Well, that's a hard thing to keep organized over the centuries. You know, quartos are fragile. Quartos don't necessarily make it for the long haul. Most of them are lost.
But, I mean, the guy who discovers it is a con man.
It's certainly a plausible story, but otherwise he wouldn't be a very good con man. On the other hand, he's a terrible con man. He ends up in prison for most of his life.
Yeah.
So maybe this is the one time he's telling the truth.
The virtuoso achievement, among others in this book, is that you produce the play. You just don't talk about this undiscovered Shakespeare play. You actually produce it, all 5 acts.
The most excellent and tragical history of Arthur, King of Britain, apparently published in 1597 based on an earlier, now lost edition, is included as the end point of the book, yes.
Not to delay the joy of discovery, our friend Matt Fry of the BBC has recorded a section.
Oh, lovely.
It's Arthur addressing Guinevere, except she's got a different name in this. How do we pronounce that, Mr. Phillips?
Guinevere.
Arthur addressing Guinevere to tell her how, as she's heard before, utterly lovely she is.
I am untongued when most I want new words to lock your beauty in my longest thoughts. I spend too soon the language I did know, like to an actor hoarse from preparation or a traveller of the Afric coast who lights with wonder on an unknown bank.
Matt Fry, the BBC, hosts Americana on BBC Radio. Sounds pretty convincing, doesn't it?
Well, with a nice accent, yeah, you can get away with anything.
I don't mind telling you, I enjoyed reading the play, but to me it was kind of like Joe Piscopo's imitation of Sinatra, which is to say it's a good imitation. But you point out not everything Shakespeare wrote was of a high quality.
You know, I'm thinking I'd like to see it put on stage sometime in the banner advertisement, maybe the marquee out on 42nd Street would say in big letters, "It's better than Henry VI." So one of the things I wanted to get at in the book was, yeah, I'm a big fan of Shakespeare, obviously,
yeah,
but he's not above serious discussion as someone that we admire as a great writer without having to talk about him as a deity beyond our human criticism.
To me, the really golden parts of this novel were the scenes of Arthur Phillips, the son, and the back and forth with the editors at Random House. And we will note, Random House is your publisher, so they're in on all this. And the way that editors at Random House, even when Arthur Phillips says, "Look, my father's a con man, this is not real," the editors at Random House don't like to hear that.
Well, let's just say for a moment that I turned up with, as which is what much of the action of the novel is about, is that I turned up at Random House and said, look what I have here. It's a 1597 Shakespeare play no one has ever heard of before. I think everyone knows what that would be worth. And so everyone in the novel goes to great efforts to authenticate it and prove what it is and what it might not be. But when the professors are lining up saying it's real and the ink and paper specialists say it's real, one guy jumping up and down saying my father's a con man is worth ignoring. So,
and in the interest of full disclosure, you create a character of Jennifer Hershey, who is your actual editor in real life.
And, Jennifer
and
Hershey,
mine too, I should point out too.
Exactly. There's Jennifer Hershey and Jennifer Hershey Prime. Jennifer Hershey in the novel is a little more willing to ignore the possibility that it's not a real play in an effort to get across the billion-dollar threshold for publishing something.
I remember talking to the late David Halberstam once, who was very proudly wearing a fake Rolex he'd bought on the streets of New York. And he said, any man who pays for a real Rolex is an idiot because the fakes will tell time for, at least a few months as well as the real one and won't tie up all that money. So he suggested that the fraud, in a way, was more valuable than the real thing. Is your book raising some of those arguments?
I do, in fact, care whether a book labeled a memoir is verifiable as a memoir. Mm-hmm. I do actually care whether something put forth as a Shakespeare play is a Shakespeare play.
In the end, does Arthur Phillips, the con man, produce something of value?
Ah, oh, wow, what a great question. Yes, I'm of, what's the term, aesthetic empiricism? I guess I'm one of those guys. I think if it's good and you like it, then it's good and you like it. And you should stick to it's good and I like it no matter what people say, whether the right person wrote it or the right person wrote it at the right time. So I'm of the position that if you like it and you think it's good, then by definition, it's good.
Mr. Phillips, great pleasure. Thanks so much.
Oh, that was good fun. Thank you.
Arthur Phillips's new novel is The Tragedy of Arthur, which is also the title of a newly discovered play by William Shakespeare, if there was such a man and such a play, that is thoughtfully included in the back of this novel.